Welcome to the NJIOA 2025 Winter Retreat. In this workshop, we'll be discussing the big book chapter called Doctor's Opinion. I'm delighted to introduce our speaker, Terry. When you're ready, you may begin your presentation. Okay, Terry, you're on.
Thank you, Jeff. And hi, everyone. Good morning. My name is Terry A.H., and I am from Maine, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and so grateful to be here with you all. And I want to thank Eileen and Audrey, people that I've had contact with, and all the committee members that have put this together. It's so beautiful, and I know the work that goes on behind it. It's a real honor and privilege to share my experience, strength, and hope with my journey and recovery. So this morning, I'm going to talk about the doctor's opinion, and I may share some paragraphs from the book and share some of my visuals because I'm a visual and I like visuals and it helps me to remember. And my hope is that my experience, strength, and hope will resonate with you and will leave you with some hope today. So before I begin, just a little bit about me. My top weight was 250 pounds, and by the grace of God, I've released 125 pounds since July 10, 2004. I will tell you, it took me a long time to get here with many relapses and along the way. And meanwhile, you know, I had been working in a bakery department of all things, like, you know, the best job for compulsive overeaters to work in a bakery department, right? So I was the baker there for 28 years. And 20 of those years struggling in and out of the food. And then I hit my last bottom in 2004, and I had the gift of desperation to reach out my hand and ask for help. And I was then introduced to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the last 8 years, I remained abstinent up until today of working in that bakery department for 28 years. And I will tell you, I'm a living example that I can go anywhere anywhere on earth as long as I'm spiritually fit and I can remain free. And that's the gift of this program. Like, it doesn't matter if you work in a bakery department or whatever, I can go anywhere. I you know, as long as I have a God of my understanding with me, I'm good to go. I want to tell you, I did everything to figure out this program by myself, you know, my eating by myself before coming into program. And not doing the program when I got here. You know, I would come to meetings and that's all I did. I just came to meetings. I wasn't really ready for a solution. I didn't really hear a solution because I wasn't ready. And I definitely didn't work the steps. And so I always say, like, just going to meetings and working the steps is like painting over rust. It looks good on the outside, but underneath is still rust because the problem is still me. And so I just, you know, I tried every known means in and out of the program, and I finally had to hit a bottom, which I did in July 10, 2004, and I'll never forget that day. You see, I can't apply the solution to my problem because I couldn't admit my problem, what it was. And for me, it was like I was always trying to fix an external problem with an external solution. So the food was my solution. It became my solution because I was reaching for the outside instead of reaching from the inside. And for so long, I treated my eating problem like a broken light switch. So here's one of my visuals, like a broken light switch. And I thought if I could just flip the right mental switch, then I'd stop. But I finally realized my body was wired differently too. No matter how much I try to control it with my mind, I needed a deeper solution. So I like to sum up my foodalog is I like to just sum it up like it was fun. You know, at first it was fun, meaning because I was eating with normal people, thinking I was eating like a normal eater. And then it was fun with problems, meaning that's when the diets came. And for someone like me, diets don't work because I was still trying to fix the problem with the problem. And then there was just problems, meaning the diet stopped working. I became the hopeless variety that it talks about in the doctor's opinion, meaning one that wants to stop but can't, but I didn't understand why. I didn't understand why I kept on the diets, yo-yoing. So that's why I love the doctor's opinion so much, because he explains my problem. And without knowing my problem, I wouldn't need a solution, right? So knowing my truth when I got here, I sat in meetings for a long time and I would say that I was a compulsive overeater, but I really didn't know what that really meant. I knew I was eating too much. I mean, that was obvious, my weight gain, 250 pounds, I'm 5'3", but I didn't know what it meant to be a real compulsive overeater suffering from a compulsive eating from a disease of body and mind. And that's why I struggled so much. So I want to just share, if you're here, if you're struggling, there is hope, but there's action to be taken. So the doctor's opinion, is going to help me. It's going to help me explain part of my problem, which he explains it so beautifully. And yeah, without the doctor's opinion, the rest of the book wouldn't make sense. So powerless over food. So what does that really mean to me, to be powerless over my alcoholic foods, which I call them, because it's just like the alcoholic who drinks alcohol. I have to look at my foods as alcohol because they do the same thing that they do to an alcoholic that's drinking. So what that looks like is a couple of components. One is choice and one is control. And what I'm looking at in the doctor's opinion is control. So nothing to do with my mind at this point. So the question I ask myself as I go through the doctor's opinion and I take others through the doctor's opinion, once I ingest any of my alcoholic foods, do I lose control? And how do I know? So the doctor's opinion is going to help me find my truth with that. I love, in the first, I'm going to pull some paragraphs probably from the book, but I love when he first talks about the reader who will be interested in the medical estimate of the plan of recovery described in the book. And so he talks about it's going to give me a plan to recover. And as Patrick talked about beforehand, the word recovered doesn't mean cured. It just means I've recovered. I don't obsess and I don't put my alcoholic foods in my body. And I live this way of life with a plan of recovery on with 10, 11, and 12. And so my visual for the plan of recovery is one of my visuals is, it's like nursing a broken bone back to health. And at first, I might not realize that the extent of the damage, but by resting, following the doctor's directions, taking the right steps and allowing it to heal, I can become whole again. And I also have like another analogy. It's kind of like a plan of recovery is like clearing a foggy windshield. So here we go. For so long, like for me, I was driving through, if you could picture it, I was driving through life, unable to see where I was going. But as I follow the recovery plan, the fog has lifted and I can finally see the road ahead of me. And that's how I kind of look at the plan of recovery. Like, I put down my foods, I understand my first step, put down the foods, get abstinent, and then he's going to give me a plan of recovery, which is the rest of the steps. So in the doctor's opinion, on page XXI, he talks about body and mind. He says in the statement, he confirms that we have suffered alcoholic, I'm going to read it as in talk it as we our language. Alcoholic torture must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or we were outright mental defectives. These things are true to some extent, but to in fact to a considerable extent with some of us. But we were sure that the bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the compulsive overeater or the alcoholic, which leaves out this physical factor, is incomplete. So he's telling me in this paragraph that I have a body that's killing my mind and a mind that's killing my body. So I like to put it in simple terms. I have a body that doesn't process my alcoholic foods, and I have a mind that does not process reality. And that's my truth. So, some of the things I I tried, you know, I've spent years trying to willpower my way out of this, like someone trying to drive a car with, you know, without fixing their engine, right? So no matter how hard I press the gas, my body and mind weren't working together. So it's like it. I need repair. I need a real repair and not just an effort. So how do I do that? Well, I put down the foods. I find out which ones that I keep running to. I keep looking at the ones that I'm ingesting. And I had to come to realize that the issue with my relationship with food isn't just in my mind. It's in my body too. It sets off this phenomenon of craving that the doctor's opinion talks about. And it's not enough to say that I can't control my eating because I'm mentally or emotionally broken or not fit for life. I mean, sure, there were times that I felt something was off in my thinking. I mean, that was obvious in my emotions. And for someone like me, it may have been more intense at times, but I'm convinced today, through the doctor's opinion, that my body itself is sick in a way that feeds into this cycle too. And that was the missing piece that I was missing, you know, just struggling. So when I look at myself as a real compulsive overeater, I see more than just the issues with the mental obsession. There's something physical that is happening to me when I ingest any form, I say, of my alcoholic foods, and something deeper that makes my cravings so overwhelming. And if I ignore this physical part of it, the picture of my struggle remains incomplete. So it's like a puzzle missing a crucial piece. You know, it's not just my mind that's at war with food, but my body's reaction is just as powerful, and it plays a huge role in why I can't seem to break free. So he talks about the craving, you know, that once I take any form of my alcoholic foods into my body, which makes so much sense to me today, it's like, so it's, if you can picture, like, we all crave air, right? Because if we didn't have air, we wouldn't be breathing, we wouldn't be here. And you know, I don't know I don't have air until someone cuts it off. So when I cut off my alcoholic foods with no solution, I get weird. You know, it's like, what's, you know, I ask myself, like, what's going on here? I know something doesn't feel right. My mind starts planning, you know, it starts obsessing, it starts scheming, and now I'm engaged again in the next compulsive bite because I need a solution, and the food is my solution, right? Because I don't have any solution at this point. So my struggle with my alcoholic foods has felt like I'm trying to row a boat with one oar, right? And so my mind, you know, it tells me to stop, but my body keeps pulling me in circles, caught in a cycle I can't break. So if you kind of picture that, like, you know, we have two oars, right, when we're rowing a boat, but when I have one oar, I'm just rowing in a circle. So he also talks about the allergy in here, and I'm not going to read that part, but I'll talk about it. You know, he tells me that I have an allergy of the body, which means every time my alcoholic foods get into my system, my body begins to do something that's called the phenomenon of craving, which means it can't be explained. And so it may look like volume eating, which is engaging in behaviors, which also sets up a phenomenon of craving that I may not be ingesting a particular alcoholic food, but I could be abs it could be abstinent food too, where I'm getting the effect for more. So and that has been a gift too, to know that it's not just about my alcoholic foods, it's about the behaviors that drive me back to picking up again. So once it enters into my body, I'm going to want another, obviously, because it's setting off this phenomenon of craving, and another until the food is gone, whether I want it or not. Right. So that's the baffling nature of this disease. This need to stop and not being able to. I mean, Bill calls it, you know, Bill in the doctor's opinion talks about the hopeless variety. So I have this craving and I can't, I, you know, I have this craving and I can ask myself another question. Did I ever get enough? And the answer was always no. I could never get enough into my system. Then I'm just gonna go to, which I love the whole book. If you know me, I say I love every paragraph, but I love the whole book. I'm going to go to page XXIV or XXVII, whichever edition you have. In the paragraph where it says frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices, the message which can interest and hold these alcoholic people must have depth and weight. In nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. And so with this paragraph, I love it because I'm a visual, I love visuals, and I've learned that the emotional appeal alone are not enough to create a lasting change for my life. You know, for a true transformation, it's not going to work. I need a message with depth and weight, something that speaks to me on a deeper level. Somebody that knows what I'm going through, somebody that's going through the same experience. And when I ground my ideals in a power greater than myself, I find that strength and guidance necessary to rebuild my life in a meaningful and lasting way. So, a visual. So it's almost like if you can look at, it's like trying to build a house on sand versus a house on a rock, right? I've tried to build my life on like shift in sands, unstable emotions, fleeting motivations, and self-will alone, right? So that's the house on the sea, you know, the house built on the sand. But each time the storm of life hits, everything crumbles, right? Because I don't have a foundation. So when I build on a solid foundation of a power greater than myself, I create something that can withstand the test of time. And so I also like to identify, I like to look, use the visual of, you know, the froth on a cappuccino, which I don't drink. It's like, you know, I've lived on frothy emotional appeal, much like the foam on a cappuccino, right? If you look at a cappuccino, it's on the top of it, it's light, airy, there's a satisfying for, you know, for a moment, but ultimately without substance, right? It starts to evaporate. So that froth may look rich and inviting, but it quickly dissolves, leaving nothing, you know, behind to sustain me. So I need real change, like the espresso beneath it, right? Beneath the foam needs depth and weight. So when I ground myself in this power greater than myself, I find the solid foundation that truly nurtures and strengthens me rather than just giving me a fleeting taste of comfort, you know, which there is no such thing for someone like me. So I'm going to go to my favorite paragraph in the book. And it's on page XXVI or XXX, whichever edition you have. And it's, oh, is that it? No, sorry, that's not the right page. It's on XXIV or XXVII. And it's the last paragraph in the book. It says, I'm going to read it as is and then talk about it, how it applies to us or to me. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it's injurious, they cannot, after time, differentiate the truth from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience that sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed, which means once they have, after they have given into to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through this well-known stage of spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over unless this person can experience an entire, not just a part, but an entire psychic change. There's little very hope for his recovery. And this is one of my ultimate favorite paragraphs with the doctor's opinion. You know, for us, it's men and women compulsively overeat essentially because they like the effect produced by their alcoholic foods, right? I have to think about why else would I go to those alcoholic foods that are actually killing me? You know, it's not because of the taste. That might be the lie that I tell myself, but it's the effect. It takes me out of reality. So, you know, I'll give you an example. So my family, my husband really thought that I liked the taste of what I was eating, right? So I asked them one day, out of curiosity, would you retrieve food out of the trash? And if you could see their faces, They're kind of in shock, and they would, they replied, "No way." And they couldn't even wrap their heads around, why I would even ask such a question. And my reply back to them was, "Well, I would retrieve what I threw away. And how many times did I do that? I've done it so many times. Tell myself a lie, only eat half of something, then go back and knowing that that other half was in the trash, and then going back and retrieve it." And I that may sound a little gross, but that's my truth. That's what I do when the phenomenon of craving is going on. And today I know why that was. It's because once I put any alcoholic foods into my body, I gotta have more, and it doesn't matter where I get it, even if it's in the trash. So, and even if it's something I don't like, I'll eat it anyway. I'll eat it until it's gone. That's my truth. So once I start, it's not going to stop, even when I want it to. And for me, it was never about being social or being with people, that I loved, where food was concerned. It was never about, events or, social events, holidays. It was never about that. I would tell myself a lie. It was about the need to get numbed out, and I wanted to feel nothing. And there were days that I hoped and prayed that whatever alcoholic foods that I put in my body would shut the voices up in my head. That's all I wanted. I wanted to be taken out of my reality. And it was never about, being around, just being social. It was never about that. And for me, it was like I would tell myself the lie, it's about a function or a holiday, because that's what I ran on, but it was always about the food. It was about the need to get good and food drunk. That's what I call it. I needed to get smashed. I needed to get good food drunk, and once I start with those alcoholic foods, I know, like now I know, that it's never going to stop unless I have something greater than myself to stop it. And I get the effect that's going on, and on my own power, there's no off button. Like there's no me turning off me. It's an effect that normal eaters don't have. You see, like I can't differentiate the truth from the false, because for me, it's like I tell myself the lie, I believe the lie, and then the lie becomes my truth. The internal shift that happens when my alcoholic foods hit the back of my mouth, it's the sensation that everything is okay, no matter what's going on external. And everything, when I put those alcoholic foods in my mouth, it's that sensation that doesn't last, that everything just got right, and I think my life becomes normal. And that's a delusion. And he talks about in here, the sensation is so elusive that, when I reach for those alcoholic foods, not just for the taste, but for the way that they moment, they wrap me in a familiar warmth. That's kind of how I look at this, like a well-worn blanket. It's kind of like the comfort is so fleeting that even though I know it does harm me, I lose sight of what is real and what is an illusion, right? Or a delusion. And over time, this indulgence becomes my normal. The lens through which I see gets, in the world gets really small, because I'm living in a delusion. I'm not living in reality. So without it, I feel like a tight, a tightly wound spring. I get restless, irritable, and discontent. And restless means uneasy. Irritable means easily annoyed, and discontented means never satisfied. Like my alcoholic foods, they just never satisfy. They only intensify. And so watching other normal eaters partake effortlessly, which I battle an urge that grows louder in ever passing moment. The first bite in a doorway, is the doorway. Once I step through it willingly, convincing myself that this time will be different. But what happens is the cravings take hold, and it's like a tide that pulls me under, dragging me through this all too familiar circle, this cycle of insanity, I like to call it, which I'm going to be talking about in a bit. So And when I do finally resurface from that, from that binge, definitely regret comes in, clings to me like just it just clings to me. And I want to swear off, to myself again that I'll never do it again. But without the deep shift within me, the rewiring is the way I see comfort. I need a rewiring through a higher power. And this pattern will keep repeating itself. It's like a carousel that I can't seem to step off. It just keeps going around and around and around. And so, compulsive overeating, my alcoholic foods, he explains it so beautiful that I know my truth today, that food is like it becomes a bucket. And I can use it's almost like, so this is another visual that I have. So it's like being in a leaky boat. So I'm in this small boat, right? And everything seems fine at first, but then I notice a slow, steady leak, and water begins to seep in, and I'm making the boat feel heavy, and it's making the boat feel heavy and unstable, right? So instead of fixing the light leak, my best thinking is I start bailing out the water with a bucket, right, frantically, and scooping and tossing it overboard, just trying to stay afloat. And the effort is exhausting, but for a moment, it feels like I'm making progress. And that's kind of the same way I look at my journey with this trying to get out of the cycle. But the water keeps coming back in. And no matter how much I scoop, the boat remains unsteady, filling up over and over again, right? So I get frustrated, I work harder, I try to outrun the flood, but deep down I know the truth. The problem isn't the water, it's the leak. And that's what needs to be fixed. So compulsive overeating, my alcoholic foods works the same way. Food becomes the bucket, used to manage stress, numb my emotions, take me out of reality. And each bite, brings temporary relief, but soon, the weight returns, pulling me back into the cycle. And so the real solution isn't eating more carefully or working harder to bail myself out. It's finding the leak and repairing it at the source. And that source is a higher power. And until the true issue is addressed, no amount of food will ever keep the boat afloat. And that's how I like to sum it up. So I want to move into just a kind of visual with this paragraph, because I love this paragraph so much. And I like to talk about it's called I like to call it the cycle of insanity or the whisper of the lie. And so my visual is, so my visual is a clock. And so I'm like this clock ticking through the hours, always like returning to the same cycle. And at first it feels, I'm s simply winding the hands to a new time, right? But soon I find myself back at 12 o'clock and at that moment of indulgence. So I continue to compulsively overeat my alcoholic foods, and the hands on the clock spin faster. And the minutes blur together in a rush of comfort. But as the cycle completes, I'm left at the same hour with regret, self-doubt, ticking louder in each passing second. So the clock resets and I vow not to repeat it. But before long, the hands start to move again and the cycle begins anew. So without a shift, I'll continue to spin in that same loop as if I'm forever stuck in an endless loop of, the same hour with no way to reset the time. So I'm going to give you this visual of the actual clock. So I call it the whisper of the lie, the cycle of insanity. So if you picture a clock, if we start at 12 o'clock, it starts at a whisper, a thought that sneaks in to my mind like a shadow creeping across the floor. And it says to me, "Wouldn't it be nice, Terry? Just a little bite." It doesn't feel that urgent yet, just a suggestion, right? So it's kind of like a light breeze rustling the curtains, and I try to ignore it, but the whisper lingers, growing stronger and stronger, and I can almost taste it before I've ever even reached for it. The hands of the clock move forward. So at 2 o'clock, the justification comes in. I call it the lies I tell myself. So the whisper is no longer subtle. It's soft but persistent. It's like a persistent drumbeat, right? It's just boom, 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 boom. My mind starts negotiating. You've had a hard day, Terry. One bite won't hurt. You'll stop after just a little. Can anyone identify? Logic might be, it might step in for that moment, remind me of the last time, but my obsession talks over it every time, drowning out every reason with empty reassurance. I believe my own lies. It isn't just a thought anymore. It's a feeling in my body needing more, right? Pulling me towards the kitchen, the pantry, the drive-throughs, the
Excuse
bakeries.
me, Terry, 5 minute warning.
Thank you. The clock ticks louder. So at 4 o'clock, the first bite is magic, right? It's a release, a relief. My body relaxes as it just exulted after holding my breath for so long, not doing it. And it just speeds up. The hands begin to spin faster, and suddenly, and not, I'm not even eating with intention. I'm eating because I have to. At 6 o'clock, I lose control. The spiral begins. Time blurs, right? My hands move faster than my thoughts because it's hand to mouth now. The bite comes quickly, one after another, like a train speeding downhill with no brakes. The more I eat, the more I need. The pleasure I was chasing has vanished, replaced by compulsion. I tell myself just one more, but I know I'm lying. I know I won't face what's coming next. At 9 o'clock, I call it the aftermath. I call it the weight of regret. The food is gone, the clock slows down, silence begins. My heart starts to ache. I see the empty wrappers, the dishes, the crumbs, the evidence of just what happened. And with the evidence comes the guilt, the remorse, and the shame. And so I ask myself, what have I done? How did I get here? How did it begin again? At 11 o'clock, the empty resolves come, the regret hardens into determination. I tell myself, this is it. This is the last time. I'm going to tell myself that tomorrow's a new day. I'll do it. It's going to be different. I'll be stronger, that I'll finally gain control. The food's down for a moment, replaced with desperate need to fix what I have been broken. And I plan my next day, strict rules, no slipping, up and a fresh start. I convince myself this time I mean it. And in my heart, I really do. I really want to stop. But 12 o'clock comes. 11 o'clock doesn't stop. The clock doesn't stop at 11, right? It keeps moving. And soon it'll strike 12 again, which will bring me back to the whisper of the lie, the whisper of insanity, the cycle of insanity, that cycle that will start over and over again unless I find a way to break that clock entirely. You see, I start to believe the lies, and I end up always running smack into the truth, always, for someone like me. And I'll just end because I know it's coming close to time. It talks about in here, he asks us, what is the solution? And this is the best part. This is where I get hope in the doctor's opinion. The 12 steps is like a recipe for healing, right? And at first, the ingredients might seem unfamiliar, but when I follow the steps carefully, precisely, and directly, I create a life that's nourishing, satisfying, and whole. And I have to say today, no longer is the doctor's opinion an opinion, it's my truth. So the truth I found out about myself through this, when I asked the question in the beginning, do I lose control? The answer is yes. And I know that's my truth today. I can't control the first bite of my alcoholic foods when I start. I can't control what happens after that bite, and I can't control when it's going to stop. And I just want to thank everyone for allowing me to be here with you this morning. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks for letting me share.